flying saucers are real.
They've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
That caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
And that's where the whole seed for the idea of underground bases at Dulce was planted.
They had very large eyes, and you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hello, this is Martin Willis, and welcome to Podcast UFO. This is part two of our abduction week. Today's guests for episode number 49 are Denise Stoner and Kathleen Marden. Wait till you hear the stories in this podcast. They're going to be talking about their new book that just came out, The Alien Abduction Files. Make sure you check out our podcast that came out just a few days ago with Ralph Blumenthal, talking mostly about his Vanity Fair article and how he got involved researching John Mack and abductions. So just sit back and enjoy the ride. I have both Denise Stoner and Kathleen Marden on Skype. How are you, ladies?
Fine, thank you.
And your new book is just out, The Alien Abduction Files. A great book. I did get my nose into it a little bit. And Kathy, you did most of the writing of this book. Can you give the listener audience an overview of it?
I'd love to. Well, the book begins with the story of Denise Stoner and her family's UFO abduction experiencers. She had two very significant missing time events, one with her husband and daughter in Colorado and the other in Florida. And then Denise gives her own personal story about the way that she has reacted emotionally and physically to all of this, and a detailed account of the experiences that she has had personally throughout her lifetime. It's a fascinating read. And then we find out what Denise has in common with other experiencers. I also had to include a chapter about one of my favorite topics of study. It's titled Anything But Extraterrestrial, and it's an overview of the government's UFO studies over the years and how they have contradicted the evidence that they have obtained in their public statements. So I found that very interesting. From there, we move on to the lengthy study of Jenny Henderson's UFO abduction experiences. This is a multi-generational abduction. Her mother, her son, and her daughter have all been taken, with all of the evidence that this has occurred, and also her emotional response to all of this. And we also discuss the commonalities study that Denise and I worked on together for a year with 50 different experiencers and a 25-person control group. We found that both Denise and Jenny have all 23 of the characteristics that experiencers have in common. And at the end of our book, we discussed several additional cases of alien abduction. And what we look for and discuss in the book are the little-known characteristics of aliens' experimental procedures, the theoretical science that can explain alien technology, the messages conveyed by the ETs to abduction experiencers, the vulnerabilities and benefits of living life as an abduction experiencer, and the evidence that the phenomena are real and not imaginary.
Wow. I want to talk to you about those messages later on. I don't want to forget that because that's fascinating to me. Denise, I would like to talk to you about your experiences because wow is all I got to say to anyone that wants to pick up the book. It's really, really fascinating and scary to think that your husband, Ed, was right there to witness what was going on, or at least you leaving and coming back and all that. And then you after further discovery, you go into some childhood happenings. So, you know, what I think is always fascinating is, okay, you're in Colorado. then you move to Florida, and they follow you. Can you talk about some of the goings-on without giving too much of a spoiler?
Yes, absolutely. From age 2.5, I've had experiences, and as a child, I really wasn't afraid because I had a vivid imagination, was always able to entertain myself. So when I first saw the object in the sky, that was my first sighting, I thought it was a nursery rhyme character.
Didn't it look like an egg or something?
Yes, it looked like Humpty Dumpty. It was huge. And that's what I told my grandfather when he came through. Who put Humpty Dumpty up there? But then I saw fear register on his face. And I thought, oh, what's he afraid of? Maybe that Humpty Dumpty's going to fall or break? Is he going to fall on our house? And, you know, those little thoughts ran through my head. But then when he wanted me to get ready for bed and close the curtains and I couldn't see anymore what was in the sky, and I was concerned. Even as a small child, I thought about it. So I was put to bed. And then this small entity came to my bedside with either a tool or a light. I wasn't sure. I still don't know, but I can picture it even today, and took my hand. I got out of bed. We went down the hall and went right through the wall and ended up in a huge craft.
Wow. Wow. Now, not to give too much away, but your story in Colorado with your whole family members and everything, everyone
yes.
waiting for you to show up, you being late. And then what is really curious is the mileage on the odometer on the car, not registering, what was it, 20-some-odd miles, just gone?
It was quite a few miles, and yes. And my husband had been setting that trip meter, not just that one time, but before that trip. He'd been setting it because when he thought something might be wrong with the mileage on the car, he set it for that, because it was a longer trip and wanted to make sure he continued to monitor what was going on. So we discovered the mileage missing and checked it. And then when we left to take the rest of the trip, the meter started right up and was running perfectly fine. So we knew something had stopped it. There had to be a reason for it. It was daylight. We knew the car had lifted off the road, or I did. He wasn't sure because he didn't have that recall. I had looked over at him, and he wasn't moving. He was just staring straight ahead. His hands were on the steering wheel, but he wasn't steering. And he just lost all recall of what occurred until we were on the far pass from one mountain pass to another and completely skipped the Glacier Valley as far as he was concerned. I knew the car lifted off the road. I felt the tires scraping, lifting over snow barriers that were there and going across the high desert with lights over the car that were attached to a huge object that I couldn't see at first. And then knew we were coming to a stop, didn't know why, and didn't recall some of that right away. And all of a sudden we're on a far pass, in the dark. It was no longer daylight. And so we knew that some hours had passed, and we were very concerned and frightened. What caused the fear? We didn't know. Disorientation, what caused that? We weren't sure. So my husband said, we need to pull over and talk about it. Let's try and figure out what happened. Our daughter was asleep in the back of the car. So after a few minutes, we moved on. We had another few miles to go, and there were my parents and a longtime friend waiting, getting ready to go into the ranch house to make a phone call to the hospital and the police. And then my dad was going to get in the car with his friend, our friend, and start to drive the route that we took to see if we were stuck in a gully over the side of a cliff, just to see if they could find us.
Yeah, that's an amazing account. Mm-hmm. And your description of the craft, I was trying to figure that out because it sounds like almost like an hourglass shaped, a very strange sounding craft.
It was. It had a centerpiece where all the lights were, but yet I knew it could fold over itself to look more like a disc. I knew that. And all the lights would then become internal somehow. It was a very strange looking craft. And I saw it both ways. I saw it as it was coming across, and the lights in the center rotated.
And wasn't it sort of biological, possibly, in the center?
It was quite possible. It was very strange, and that's what affected me when I was taken to see that. I could feel or had a physical sensation before I entered the doorway where this center core was. My muscles reacted, my nerves reacted. I didn't know it because I was in a pretty deep hypnotic trance at the time. I was appearing to feel pain, and Kathleen had to give me a suggestion that I was just observing and not feeling at the time. And so afterwards, when she asked me if I realized what was going on, I wasn't sure. I didn't think so. And so later on, I asked her to repeat the process and videotape it.
Are you talking about when you were under hypnosis?
Yes, mm-hmm. I was under hypnosis when I described visiting the center core of the craft. And I had a physical visual reaction that Kathleen could see. When I started to feel, it was both nerve involvement, muscle involvement, and a movement that was difficult for me to describe when I saw it on the film. But then I had carried it with me and was having some odd reactions at home in real life, and doctors could not and still cannot diagnose it.
Wow. Now, the one thing that comes to mind, Denise, is something that I would feel is like, why me? Do you feel that?
You know, I don't pay too much attention to that anymore. I used to ask that, and I at one point spent 3 days going over the religious aspects. What was it going to do to my belief system? Should it do something to it? Why me? Was I special? Was I not special? What did I think of myself? And at the end of the 3-day period, I said, well, I guess why not me? Maybe I'm supposed to help people. Maybe this is my goal, my status, my purpose in life. And so we'll just go on from here.
And by the way, you have been doing research on the abduction experience for quite a while, so you are helping people out there.
That's what I want to do, yes, both privately for people that want to come and meet and not be talking about it in the public view, in the public a public setting, and also for those that want to come to meetings in the open and aren't afraid or worried about how it will affect their lives. So I do that as far as public meetings also, yes. And I like research. I like the scientific portion of it, and Kathleen and I are working on that.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, can you talk about the messages? Because I want to know more about that. I've heard some things in the past and kind of scary things about possible future catastrophes on planet Earth and things like that. Is that what you're talking about when you say messages?
When I say messages, I'm referring to several different messages that people have reported to me that they've received from extraterrestrial beings while they were on the craft. And they often come as either downloads of information that they might not remember fully when they're on the craft, but might be able to recall under hypnosis, although they do remember bits and pieces of it. There are also messages that they receive by looking at screens on the craft where they are shown visual messages, or through holographic images on the craft. Now, these visual messages, and these are the ones that are so worrisome to many experience because they depict the destruction of a planet, and you might see a planet that appears to be lifeless. And many people interpret this as meaning that this might happen to planet Earth. I don't know if that is what is happening, or are the ETs giving the experiencers here the message that this has happened to their own planet. So there's a little bit of controversy here about what the message actually means. Some people are also given messages about what the ETs are doing, what their mission is. And many people will say that they receive information that the ETs mean no harm, they care about us, that they are here to help us, sort of to look over us. But in reality, they have a policy of non-interference. So they're more observers, but also that they are very concerned about human DNA sequences. And they're concerned that something might threaten our species, and that if we're not careful, it could lead to the disintegration of our species due to changes in our DNA structure that are being caused environmentally. And so that they are collecting these DNA samples in order to propagate our species if necessary. Now, there are other researchers who do believe that the ETs are producing hybrid beings and that those hybrid beings are going to be used to repopulate the Earth as well. So none of this is for sure. It's all highly speculative, but these are some of the messages that I've received.
Wow, very interesting. Are there thoughts from either one of you, or at least discussion, if these beings are other than extraterrestrial?
I would have to say, from my experience, my own personal experience, is that the beings that I met, with the exception of one, they were from another place in the universe, from another planet, and they were trying to work with us so that we can all work together to preserve our planets and to keep those going in a proper fashion so that we don't destroy what we have. The one being that I did meet, I question where that being was from. Was he a time traveler? Was he something that was interdimensional? It's quite possible that he was.
Can you tell me why the Jenny Henderson 1988 abduction was important enough to include in the book?
I certainly can. Jenny has had experiences at least since she was a teenager, when she had a missing time event. And those experiences had a very traumatic effect upon her life due to the fear that she felt as a result of all of this, and the feeling that she really couldn't discuss it with other people. And so often we find that fear is often alleviated when a person is able to come out with their experiences and to discuss them with others who have had that same kind of experience, and they receive support. But Jenny didn't for many, many years. And she did finally see Dr. James Harder, who worked for APRO. He was a professor at a college in California, and specialized in abduction research, and also spoke with my Aunt Betty briefly. But when she came to me, she really wanted to start discussing with someone her experiences, what had happened to her, and to know if this had anything in common with what other people were reporting. And so I was very pleased that she did come to me. She had a very significant event in 1988, and this event occurred actually when she was in bed. And so many people might say that, oh, it was probably sleep paralysis with hypnagogic or hypnopompic hallucinations, or it was just a dream. But Jenny woke up in the morning with evidence that something had happened. There was blood on her pillow. There was blood on her son and her daughter's pillows.
Wow.
She had burns, triangular-shaped burns at the top of her back, and she still bears the scars from those burns. She had a sunburn-type effect on her back. She turned on the bathroom light. It popped out. Nothing unusual about that for a light bulb to blow out, but she stepped into the shower, and her back began to burn. Her eyes began to burn. Tears ran down her cheeks and caused red trails. She had more hair loss than usual and had significant hair loss over the next few weeks.
Sure sounds like radiation.
It does sound like radiation poisoning. She became disabled as a result. She had to leave her career and take a leave of absence. And her physician even stated to her that sometimes some patients went to him and seemed to have evidence of radiation poisoning, and he had no idea where this had come from. But she certainly did exhibit those symptoms, although her children didn't. It seemed to be just her on that particular night. And there were also these electromagnetic effects, the interference with her hairdryer that burned out when she stepped out of the shower. She went downstairs. She started to prepare breakfast, and the electric mixer then burned out. Her son's computer game turned on and started working automatically, and that had never happened before. It was just one thing after another in these series of very eerie events, and her conscious continuous recall that something had occurred. And then each of her children spoke to her about memories that they had that night, and they had never discussed UFOs or aliens before this occurred. So her daughter remembered observing what she thought was an airplane outside her bedroom window. She said she could see the windows in it. It was so close, and the people in it, and that she almost woke her mother up but didn't want to disturb her. And then she said she spent the remainder of the night, it seemed, outside the house in this funny little house playing games with these funny little people. And then her son stated that he had never believed in UFOs before, but now he knew they were real. And it was all of this that combined to make a very interesting story. And the hypnosis of what happened to her over an extended period of time in several different encounters with extraterrestrial beings is all in the book.
Wow.
The Alien Abduction Files.
Denise, I'm going to ask you a several-part question here.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, what was the fear level that you had? And secondly, what was the last time that something happened that you're aware of? And also, are you aware of anything happening with your daughter?
I don't believe anything has happened with my daughter. Why, I don't know, because it usually runs in families. My fear level, I really had none as a child. I felt like I was going to a special school and I was learning. As I got older, my fear level raised to the point where it is today, and I don't usually go to sleep until between 4 and 6 o'clock in the morning. I will do anything to stay awake. Wow. Even if I tell myself it's okay, I can go to sleep. If I do go to sleep, I'll be awake within 10 minutes. I just wake up, eyes pop open, and I will find something to do. My side of the bed is surrounded by pillows. I sleep at the foot of the bed, the head of the bed. I sleep sideways. It's very, very confusing looking, like a little cocoon. And when did I have my last experience? In February.
Wow.
And
really?
We can ask Kathleen, because she was involved in that day. It was just a very confusing day for both of us. We had trouble with electronics in both of our cars. I wear an insulin pump. The battery on that died, and it was a 3-month pump that I had just put in, or battery. My cell phone wasn't working. The electronics on my mirrors on my car weren't working so that I could adjust them to see what was going on outside the vehicle. The radio quit. A fuse blew. It was just a very confusing day. I took a pathway or road home that I normally wouldn't take, and then it ended up I wasn't on that road either. The whole day was just very, very confusing, and I do not know exactly how I got home until later on. I went looking for an apartment building I was sure I was at and saw craft coming out of the water. We're working on that.
Kathy, can you elaborate a little more on that last day in February?
Yes, I can. It was just such a very strange trip home. My father was with us, and the three of us had gone to a meeting in St. Petersburg, and I noticed that the GPS system on my car was malfunctioning on the way home even, too, and it kept telling me to turn off from the highway, and I knew that I wasn't supposed to turn off. I actually did the first time and realized that I was in the wrong location and just drove and got back on the highway. And we were wondering why this was occurring. It hadn't happened before, and we'd made that trip plenty of times before. And then there were all of the malfunctions of Denise's equipment. And as we approached home, and I dropped her off at the destination where she was going to get her car and drive back to her home. We live about an hour away from each other, and we took a central location to each drive to. She got into the car, and this is when she discovered the malfunctions with her own vehicle. Now, she contacted me after that, and she said, "I think I had an experience last night." And fortunately, she has a tri-field natural EM meter. So it's a magnetometer. It measures a magnetic field, electromagnetic field, and an electrical field. And there was a high electromagnetic reading on her vehicle. She finally brought the car over to me along with her meter. I have ended up purchasing one since then because this is so fascinating. We knew that the dashboard of her car and this equipment was malfunctioning. Her husband had attempted to fix it. But what was so strange is that it continued to malfunction until the day that she came to my house. And we took the tri-field meter and did a measurement. And then, amazingly, everything began working properly again for for some unknown reason. And something else happened that day, too. I had never thought of measuring the electrical field around a human being who had been abducted. And we put it on the electrical just to experiment. Denise was explaining all of this to me. And whenever she approached it, she got a very high reading. It would arc, actually. It would go to full capacity and make a sound. Wow. And so we experimented with other people, experimented with my husband in the same location. Didn't do it for him. She experimented with her husband, with her daughter. It didn't do it for them. It was only when she, having just recently been abducted, was near that she was emitting a strong electromagnet or a strong electrical field around her body.
I always thought she had a magnetic personality.
And I did hypnotize Denise and took her back to that night, and she spoke a little bit about being on the craft. And there were also two other people on the craft, and she could just get a glimpse of them as they were sort of across the hallway from her, I think it was. And there was an older man who was balding, and there was also a woman in there, and they were both seated. And the woman was dressed in a sweater, and Denise was wondering if the scarf this woman was wearing was attached to this sweater. And, you know, the very eerie thing about this is my father was with me and he's balding and I was wearing a sweater with a scarf. And so this is very, very confusing. She wasn't able to determine if it was my father and myself or not, but it just sort of gave me the creeps to hear about this and think about it.
Wow. Well, Denise, has this been really tough on family life?
You would think that it would affect family very, very strongly, but since my husband had that, well, he had more than one occasion to be taken either with me or to witness something going on with both of us. He's been very good about it. He gets wow. into bed at night and he'll put an eye mask on, plug his ears up and go to sleep, and that's it. I can have my TV on, the lights on. I'm in my weird little cocoon, and whenever I go to sleep, I go to sleep. And he's just been terrific about it. And we're both retired now, so I'm not getting up, having to be at my desk on the Navy base and in the research facility by 6 o'clock in the morning anymore. That was tough.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
That was
especially
really
when
tough.
You're just going to sleep then. On the survey you did for the commonalities, can you just say, like, for instance, what were some of the things that Denise and Jennifer had in common with their experiences?
Well, I can tell you the most highly significant characteristics they had is that 88% stated that their abduction memories were consciously recalled, and so were a good part of Denise's and Jenny's as well. They weren't retrieved entirely through hypnosis. There was a lot of conscious, continuous recall there. They also consciously recalled the observation of a flying saucer, a UFO, at less than 1,000 feet away from them before at least one abduction. They were not alone when they were taken. And there were people waiting for them on the other end who could confirm that they were hours late in returning to their destination. Something else that is highly significant is that 88% of experiencers state that there is paranormal activity in their homes, generally in the form of poltergeist activity or light orbs following a UFO abduction experience. Immediately around that event, not necessarily every day of their lives, but immediately around that event. And most individuals develop a psychic ability, at least temporarily, or become more sensitive to this after an experience.
I have a question. How about orbs? That's something I've heard about that people have talked about after an abduction.
Yes, it's quite prevalent for people to observe light orbs in their homes. And there's a little speculation about whether or not these light orbs are actually the consciousness of an extraterrestrial floating through the air before it expands into its full body form. And many people have reported that it does rapidly expand and becomes an ET just before an experience occurs. And so why would this be? And it could be that they're a lot less frightening in that form than if they were to walk into your house in full body. In fact, a man sent me a photograph this morning of a light orb that he photographed inside his home. And there appears to be a little ET faced inside this.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, you both have been wonderful. The book is called The Alien Abduction Files, Kathleen Martin and Denise Stoner. Ladies, you've been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for having us.